burned at the
Sydney.
Stake, though.
No, no, you'll be fine. You'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah.
David in Bristol says, I'm pretty sure it was hotter in the Middle Ages than it was today. Surely, says David, the Earth naturally goes through hot and cold periods. Leading on from this, we don't yet know enough about the way the Earth works, e.g. dust particles, to determine the possibility of global warming.
Well, that's a great question. So there's several things there. David is referring to what scientists call the medieval warm period. The medieval warm period is very well documented. We know a lot about it from historic records. We know a lot about it from tree ring studies, ice cores, coral reefs, etc. And we know two important things about it. One is that the medieval warm period was a phenomenon in Europe. It was warm in Europe. It was not warm everywhere else in the globe. Coral reefs from tropical areas do not show evidence of warming. So it was not a global warming phenomenon.
It was a local thing.
It was a regional phenomenon.
You could fit all of Europe into Queensland
and have
room left over. Europe's tiny compared to the world.
Well, we don't want to insult our European friends. Yeah, but the important thing is to realize that that does not refute global warming. Second of all, crucial work done by scientists, including the much maligned but wonderful people at the Climate Research Unit in East Anglia, have analyzed historic temperature records and show that even given the medieval warm period, the warming we are observing today now is greater than the warming that took place in Europe during the medieval warm period. So yes, absolutely, there is natural variability. Life is interesting. The world is interesting. Climate changes. But the changes we are seeing now are different. They are bigger than the known changes in historic records. And moreover, and this is the part I think is most important for people to understand, it's not just random variability. We know something about the laws of physics and chemistry, and one of the things we know is that if you put more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere traps more heat. This was first discovered by the great Irish experimentalist John Tyndall in the 1850s, and the prediction that climate change would happen from increasing greenhouse gases was first made by Svante Arrhenius at the turn of the century, the great Swedish geochemist. Arrhenius was Swedish, so he thought global warming would be a good thing. So this is a basic prediction from the laws of physics and chemistry. And what we are seeing now is that those predictions are coming true. So yes, there is natural variability, but on top of that natural variability, there is a trend, and that trend is being driven by greenhouse gases and also deforestation.
What about the dust particles?
Thank you. I actually had a little note. I was going to say something about that. Now, we actually know a lot about dust particles, too, and again, from historic records. So lots of people have heard of Krakatoa, Tambora, the great John Turner watercolors, the beautiful sunsets. Those were the consequence of dust particles in the atmosphere after volcanic eruptions. We know quite a bit about cooling effects of dust particles, and one of the really brilliant pieces of scientific work that was done in the last 20 years was by Jim Hansen, the NASA climate modeler. So people often say, oh, you can't prove global warming, you can't test it, the models are uncertain, they're just models, why should I believe a model? Well, people are right to be skeptical of models. I'm skeptical of models. I've written some articles about this. But Jim Hansen did something incredibly brilliant after the Mount Pinatubo eruption in the Philippines. He realized that the Earth would probably cool as a result of the dust particles in the atmosphere. And so he did a very courageous thing. He took his global climate model, a general circulation model of the atmosphere, which was designed to model long-term warming from greenhouse gases. It was not designed to model volcanic eruptions. But he said, if this model is right, if we've got the physics and the chemistry right, we ought to be able to predict the temporary cooling effect from Pinatubo in addition to predicting the long-term warming effect. And so he took the data that volcanologists gave him about the amount of dust that had been put into the atmosphere from Mount Pinatubo, and he used the model to forecast what the cooling, the temporary cooling effect of that dust should be until the dust particles settled out. And he got that prediction right. And to me, that was very courageous because he put his neck on the line. And it showed that these models do appear to be reliable, and it would seem that as far as we can tell, they do seem to have the physics and chemistry right.
Wow. Let's have another potato cause for everything we're going through as we're joined by Andrew on the phone. Andrew from London. Hello, Andrew.
Good morning. Good morning, Rod. Good morning, Dr. Carl. And good morning, your guest. Following on from what you've just been talking about. Oh, by the way, Dr. Carl, before I ask my question, something of interest to you. We have a phone-in program run by Dot Nadabaya where people choose books to go into the virtual bookshop. And I phoned in and recommended one of your books, Munching Maggots, Noah's Flood, and TV heart attacks, which I've got. Got lots of votes, but didn't quite get on, Dr. Carl. But anyhow, I recommend
it. Even though it's got a picture of me nude in a mud bath with my son
absolutely
on the back cover.
That's you.
In California.
Yeah.
What do I have to do? That was my 18th book. I mean.
Well, I recommend it. It's a fascinating book, full of great, great sort of bits of information and so on. And you got lots of votes, but just didn't get on our virtual book show. I thought I'd let you know about that.
Thank you.
Good.
Now, talking about our the global warming, the accepted theory is that carbon dioxide and other gases produced by us horrible human beings, cars, planes, coal-powered power stations and so on. However, I've read an article by three Danish scientists who say that most of the global warming is caused by the interaction of cosmic rays coming from exploded stars and our sun. When the sun is in a vigorous mood, it causes more warmth. When it's not, when it's quiet, there's less warmth, and they claim that most of the changes in climate, most of them, are caused by the sun and cosmic rays rather than they are man-made. What do you say to that?
Yeah, thanks. That's a great question, and it's great when we get these things out in the open so we can discuss them.
Sure.
So I think this is a really good example of the lengths that people will go to deny the fact that we have a responsibility here and that we have, in fact, changed the atmosphere. So my co-author on Merchants of Doubt is Eric M. Conway. He works for NASA. And one of the things that NASA does is it measures solar radiation. NASA has had highly accurate satellites up in the atmosphere since the 1970s measuring solar irradiation. And we know from that data that there has been no general increase in solar irradiance over the period of time during which we've seen this warming
effect.
Now,
I should point out that the sun is not a constant candle.
No,
and it varies
right.
by roughly 0.1% over an 11-year cycle.
Right. So we know, like the climate system itself, we know there's natural variability in solar irradiance. But what we're talking about is a trend. We're trying to explain this trend of the steadily increasing warming that we've observed over the last 50 or 60 years. And that trend, there is no increase in solar irradiance that would explain that observed trend. And in fact, in the last 10 to 15 years, solar irradiance has actually gone down a little bit, even while we've seen warming continuing. The warming would probably actually be greater were the sun not in a slight declining period right now. Now, I want to just say one other thing about what you just said, Andrew. So you used the phrase, us horrible human beings.
Yes.
And I'm glad you said that, because I think this is really the crux of the denial issue. Because global warming makes people feel bad because they feel that they're being told that they're bad people, that we're horrible, that we're doing all these terrible things. But of course, I spend most of my time with climate scientists, and climate scientists almost never talk about horrible human beings unless it's their department chair or their dean or the president of their university. You know, for scientists, this isn't about whether human beings are good or bad. It's about the laws of physics and chemistry. It's about the chemistry of the atmosphere and what's happening to our climate system. Yes, it does mean that there are consequences that we need to talk about, but personally, I think human beings are by and large great. I love Dr. Carl here, who's sitting in the room with me. So it's not about people being horrible. It's about people having lived a lifestyle that made us prosperous, made us wealthy, made us happy. It's been good. By and large, we've had a good run. But now we've discovered that there's this little problem, and we need to do something about it.
Okay. Now one other thing, Andrew, you mentioned the paper by the three Danish scientists on the cosmic rays.
I can give you their names, if you like.
Can you give me the date of the paper?
No. I remember reading it. I took their names, and Knud Lassen.
Okay, the point is
Christensen and Henrik Svensmark.
Svensmark co-wrote a book with Nigel Calder, who's a British science writer, which we talked about with Nigel on this program, called The Chilling Stars. And that book is very much still out there.
It's interesting also about cosmic rays. People love to blame cosmic rays for lots of things, just like they love to blame volcanoes. In our book, we show how practically every major environmental problem there's been in the last 50 years, someone has tried to blame volcanoes. And, you know, volcanoes are like the scapegoat of the planet, because we know they exist and we know they do put dust and sulfur and
fluorine. And they can cool down the planet, the Pinatubo event.
Right, yeah. But the Pinatubo event, the cooling lasted about 2 years. It's a very short-term event. And although volcanoes do a lot of damage, they don't explain global warming, they don't explain acid rain. There's just a lot of things they don't explain.
To sum up, Do you say the cosmic rays in conjunction with the sun's vigorous sort of moods, play very little part in global warming?
Yeah, well, the point I was getting to was that the paper was written about a decade ago.
Ah, yeah.
And the scientists, other scientists have gone through it and basically said, an interesting idea, completely wrong. Mm. So it's been thoroughly debunked in the peer-reviewed literature since then.
Well, I bow to your greater knowledge.
And with regard to the East Anglia people, the climate gate thing, the worst thing, after a very intensive investigation, the worst thing they could find was that, and I quote, "not all scientists like each other." Well, hey, not all plumbers get on automatically with all other plumbers. Not all carpenters like all other carpenters. The worst thing is they say, "oh, that Naomi, God, she pushed in the queue in front of me in the cafeteria. God, I hate her." That's about as big as it gets. That was the most damaging finding they could come up with, was that not all scientists like each other.
And they're not always nice to each other.
They're not always nice to each other.
Right.
But the science is robust.
Well, I'm good.